Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, this is Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's going on, all my woods people? Today I'm sitting here on a bed doing some editing, and KC is filling up gas tanks or something. What are you doing, KC?
I'm just preparing to go into a bunker for 6 months. I think it's kind of my plan. I'm getting gas for the generator and whatnot.
It's good.
I've been taking care of babies and mechanicking on lawnmowers today. So you and I are both so busy that we just can't line up a schedule to actually meet up and do an intro today. So I am coming in remotely from like 8 miles from your house. So that's what's going on right now.
Yeah. That sounds like a pretty dad life day there.
It is, man. It's, you know, but when you become a dad, Tyler, you know this all too well, but you get proud of your lawnmower. You know, you got to work on your lawnmower. So I guess that's a dad thing to do.
Not me, man. I mowed too much as a high schooler and college kid to be proud of a lawnmower. I'm actually proud of the fact that I don't own a lawnmower anymore.
I wish I didn't, but sometimes when you get a house that already has an established yard, it's hard to be like, oh, I'm not mowing this, you know.
Yeah. So I did it in up there in Sulphur quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. Well, y'all was pretty small. You could probably weed eat that thing if you needed to.
Oh, really? You would weed eat a half acre?
No, I'm talking about the front. Just
well,
the front.
Well, that's not the only part that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was the front was definitely the easy part, but with a push mower, it still took forever, man.
Yeah.
That was all I had for a while. But
that's what I need right now, honestly, is a push mower, because these riding lawnmowers take a lot more mechanicking.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not really that much of a workout. Like, that's the good thing about push mowing, man, is, like, that's your workout for the day.
Yeah.
For sure, if you push mow a yard.
I think the last year I lived in that house, I actually just killed the yard with, you know, Roundup. I was like,
that's good.
You know, I'm not doing this. So
Roundup in July dry sun is a pretty good way to kill a yard.
Yeah.
It will kill it dead.
No more working on lawnmowers. No more, you know, working behind lawnmowers. I was
right. I guarantee you, if my yard continues to need to be mowed into October, I'm definitely Roundup that sucker. There ain't no time for lawn mowing in deer season.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about putting some ryegrass out here in a couple weeks for you, but you know.
Oh, no.
I guess I won't
do that.
That's
not going to work, sir. It's not going to work.
Ooh, man. Well,
oh, man.
I have been working on tons of video stuff all day. There has been many uploads going to YouTube, trying to schedule stuff out because we've got a busy September. Me and Jack in particular, and you've got some stuff lined up for September as well, but Jack and I are taking off here in a couple days to head to Nebraska, and we're going to try to scout a couple of days before the season and then go out and shoot something that's, you know, cool and maybe in velvet. So the one thing I don't know is, like, I don't know what you do with velvet antlers. Like, aren't you supposed to, like, don't guys, like, inject them or something? I don't know what you're supposed to do.
I mean, it depends on how big the critter is, I think. I mean, if you're talking about something that's like a Euro mount, a lot of guys just strip them and just do the antler.
Yeah.
Anthony just froze his, and he just takes it out of the freezer and looks at it from time to time.
Yeah.
So one way to do it. You can eat it, you know, if you want to get the testosterone boost from it, I think. So
I'm not too big on that one, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe Jack, since he's 20, he needs all you can get, you know. So
I'm thinking, like, if I do shoot a buck and it's anything less than what I would maybe deem, like, shoulder mount worthy, I kind of think that I'll just skull cap it.
Probably easy, especially when you're talking about the CWD stuff across state lines, you know.
Skull cap it and wash that top out and then put it on a maybe I'll cut out a board that looks like Nebraska and then put it
there
on that board, you know.
There you go.
My dad used to have Texas like a Texas shaped little board or whatever that he would do, and he would sketch them or whatever and then cut them out, and we did my first few bucks were done on a Texas board. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Tony Treach is who we're going to talk to today in this interview, and I've actually already edited the interview part of it.
Mm.
And Tony has a very detailed way of getting rid of all that brain matter inside of a skull, if you care to listen.
Sounds real not up my alley, you know? Somebody's got to do it, right?
I mean, somebody's got to do it, man.
There's people that don't care.
Yeah, I've done it before. It works. Whenever you're traveling and whatnot across state lines and going to hunt here, there, and everywhere, like, there's all kinds of stuff like that to consider, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was a couple of years ago, we kind of talked to Brian Murphy from QDMA about some of that stuff. You may be able to go back and look in the archives and find that episode if you're interested in it. We're going to be doing some traveling. We're going to Nebraska. And this is basically, the reason I'm uploading all this content right now is because it's produced, it's ready to go out, and when we get to September, it's basically, let's focus on the season playlist and what's going on in the season and hunting and that kind of thing. So with that, you know, we're going to be pretty excited. The season intro, I think, is going to release on September 1st. It's, you know, the intro that goes before everything, and it's very similar to last year, except for all the clips are pretty much, like, almost all the clips are from last year's season. So,
lots of clippage.
It used to be that first intro was from years and years, you know, it was the top, top notch, cream of the crop stuff. But this stuff is pretty awesome too, man. It's no slouch. So I'm excited to release that season intro on YouTube on September 1st. I'm also really excited for the season playlist to start, because I've been watching some of that stuff today as I've been, like, working on some different editing stuff that doesn't require a ton of attention but maybe requires time. I'll, like, go through and start watching some of the videos from the season last year, and dude, it is, like, you want to talk about crunk fest, man. It'll get you up.
Oh yeah, man. Like, I'm thinking about the elk stuff, right? Because that's my next hunt,
right?
Is an elk hunt. Like, I don't get to go to Nebraska with y'all this year, but we're all going to be heading up September 14th to go elk hunting. And sheesh, there is some epic elk stuff in the season playlist that just gets me so crunk, man. Like, and what actually is kind of sad is, like, there's no way. I would love to be like Mr. Optimism and say we're going to have a year just like last year with encounters, but there's just no way it happens because we're going to a different place, you know? So, like, I don't want it to be a big letdown. However, like, it's okay to get hype about big elk bugling, even if you're not going to get to, like, have quite the same experience, you know what I mean?
Well, there's always a chance, man. Some big old elk just comes through and, you know, and you have a chance, man. But even still, I mean, sometimes a rag can sound like a pretty cool elk too, you know?
So I can guarantee you one thing, Mr. Rag better watch out, because he's going to get a tag. That's right.
Come on.
That's right. Come on.
Man, I'm excited, man. I'm excited. This is going to be the first year that I've had a tag in my pocket since
you have a tag in your pocket.
Yeah.
Right?
Since 2011.
We officially both have our licenses and we will be ready to hunt. It's down. It's going down.
Yeah, Browns going down is what's happening.
Browns,
right?
Down Browns.
Yeah. 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 So pretty stoked about that. And, you know, that just starts our season, man. September's going to be busy. Two out-of-state hunts. And hopefully, who knows what's going to happen towards the end
kind
of the month.
Three.
But
really?
Yeah. I guess we're leaving at the end of the month probably to go to South Dakota, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So it's a busy out of state month coming up, and I'm pretty excited about it. And there's going to be lots of traveling involved, which is why we wanted to have Tony Treach talk to us, right?
That's right, man. He's like the freaking guy if you want to talk about traveling to hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude almost doesn't live at his home because he travels so much to hunt, you know?
Dude, I've never heard of anybody who carries freezers around across the western U.S. and drops them off.
That's when you know a guy's a killer, too.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I need to go ahead and make sure I have enough freezers for seven animals because I have seven packs. You know? Like, you and I are like, man, how many coolers should we bring? I don't know. Probably don't need any.
Yeah, probably not. Can we just, you know, how many coolers can we get in the bed of the truck? Oh, zero? Okay, well, that's all right. We probably won't kill
that's
one
fine.
Anyway. So.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but anyway, we're going to talk to Tony a little bit about traveling, and maybe we'll get some, like, osmosis where we just, like, start to really figure out how to actually put stuff in freezers. You know what I mean?
So. Yes. Please let Tony Treach be my spirit animal for the season. That'll be fine.
Well, you ready to get him on the phone?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
All right, now on the phone, we've got Tony Treach. Tony, what's been going on, man?
Not much. I'm just getting going on my fall trip. I'm headed west. I left this morning and had a little bit of vehicle malfunction, but we're moving. I've been driving since about 12 hours now. So
yeah, you're going through the best some of the best whitetail country in the world right now, man.
I am. I'm in central Iowa, and it's green. They've had looks like a very wet summer and spring, and I'm sure there's some big velvet bucks I'm driving by.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. So we talked to you maybe about a year ago, probably. I think you were a part of our part of some of the stuff we were doing last summer. And so since then, what's been going on, man? What are you involved with?
Still writing for Rockslide, doing gear reviews, doing freelance writing. I think I'll have this year. I'll have three different articles in East Venice, and at one last year in Mustard Hunter, just on gear that I've or milk that I've killed. I killed a couple good bucks last year. Both were runners, Ian Grossbone and Crockett. Both of my bow. Got a big elk. That was with a gun. Chased a monster, a couple monster elk in Montana. Didn't draw any blood. And then trying to think. I chased ibex around in New Mexico with a bow. Got humiliated. I earned a couple shot opportunities, and I did get a shot off, but my arrow caught vegetation right in front of me, about 4 feet right in front of me. I thought I was going to clear it and just drag me on, slow my arrow down enough. I shot right underneath them, and I missed a couple, or not missed, but I passed up opportunities to shoot some smaller bellies. But dodged a couple of rattlesnakes, literally almost stepped on one, had to deal with launched myself backwards, and it was a scary place to be. I mean, yeah. Just everything there wants to kill you. But well, yeah, I got married. That was a little bit scarier than the rattlesnake, but that happened to me this winter right before COVID hit.
That's cool.
But I did good. I married up. So.
Yeah, you found your girl that likes your hobby, or at least appreciates your hobby or your passions that you do, man. That's cool. And you found the elusive Costa Rican whitetail.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
That's I think we actually caught COVID down there, too. On our way back through, we went through O'Hare and Newark, and then 3 days after my wedding, I was deathly sick, and actually I did a podcast with wired hunt, and I was coughing and hacking the whole time. I kept having to apologize about it. I went to the doctor, and she did the, you know, the nasal swab test for influenza A and B, because she said, "Oh, that's what it is. It's class inclusive." And came back negative the next day. She was so perplexed, the doctor. And Jody got sick, my wife, and then all my guys at work got sick, and one of them actually came to me the next, you know, I called him the next day after he was sick. You know, I left work, and he said, "It's the weirdest thing." And this was early February, where before they knew anything about it. And he said, "It's the weirdest thing. I can't smell or taste my food." And, you know, like, so a month later, when we find out that that's one of the things, we were all looking at each other like, "Huh, I guess we're good now."
That's, right before they shut down Texas, my daughter was really sick for a few days with a real high fever, and I was with her in a 567 square foot building for like 4 of the 5 days the week before their spring break, while she was sick, and didn't catch it. And like, they were saying how the 20 to 30 year old kind of people are like, sometimes don't catch it, and they can be, you know, a carrier that's asymptomatic or whatever. And I was like, it's like, man, I almost guarantee you that's what she had. And you know, I catch everything, dude. And I didn't have any symptoms or anything, you know? So I was like, if it was the flu, I would have had it, man. Like, no doubt, you know? So, weird deal, man. I feel like we've kind of already gone through it too, but who knows, man, here in 2 weeks, I might be real sick. Who knows?
Hope not.
But I think a lot of, at least, so we were kind of, you know, everything, and obviously New York was ahead of pretty much everybody here in the U.S., and I think Texas has been behind a little bit, but I have a buddy who works in the medical field that goes to my church, and he was like, "I think what we're going to see is about 2 more weeks looking at the graphs and stuff, about 2 more weeks here in Texas, and I think we're out of the woods at that point." So hopefully that's the case.
Yeah. Keep this stuff behind us and try to get back to bring it to life.
That's right, man. That's the truth, man.
Has it affected, like, any of your plans or your travels for the fall as far as, like, places you can and can't go?
No. The only thing that really has affected my travel is, like, when I go to Kansas, so I'll do this mountain trip in the Rockies to hunt these mule deer and elk tags, then go home for a little while, process all the animals that I get, and then I'll go back to Kansas on a separate trip. And I usually go through St. Louis and Kansas City, and I think I'm going to go around those cities. I don't want to be caught in a situation where there's protesters blocking the freeway.
Sure.
You know, it's that's a concern. I mean, I don't want to. I'm just going to avoid spots that might be trouble. I just don't want to have to deal with it.
So. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah,
man.
Definitely, man. And you know what? We went turkey hunting this spring, quick trip, and to get into turkeys in Texas, we pretty much have to go either south or west. And so we went west, and we had to go through the Metroplex, the DFW Metroplex, and I realized very quickly after stopping at the first convenience store that there was no restrooms that were going to be open in the entire Metroplex. You know what I mean? They were not going to let you in these convenience stores to use the bathroom. And I was like, I just drank, like, you know, some caffeine drink or whatever. I was like, dude, this is not good. So I just, I'll admit this. I may get a ticket for this in the mail or something, but I peed in the parking lot. I mean, I had to, dude. It was, you know, I just crack the door open and take a pee with the Interstate 30 right beside you, you know, and just hope nobody really cares to look. So,
you see, what you need there is, you should call me, because I've got I travel so much, during the fall that you always carry a pee jug, a gallon pee jug in the cab with you in the truck.
Yeah. I try to carry Gatorade bottles, a lot of times, and I literally have done that while driving. But you know, we stopped. I was thinking I could go to the bathroom, and so I was like, "Well, I might as well just do this, you know, here, because easier than KC driving through Dallas traffic, you know, and me trying to pee into a Gatorade
bottle."
Which
actually happened a couple months later.
Oh, it's happened.
He had to pee in
times.
A coffee mug here about a month ago.
Dude, peeing's it's a pastime for me. I don't know about y'all. I love peeing.
Well, that's an advanced technique there. I haven't done it while I'm driving. Usually, what happens to me is, like, you know, tonight when it gets dark and I'll get tired, I'll just pull over at some rest stop or parking lot and fall asleep. But I just, you know, I'm always parked. It's not a driving situation.
Yeah. What's your tip? Yeah, I probably shouldn't have admitted that. what's your tip for KC's wondering how do you pee into a bottle and not drink it?
Oh yeah.
You know, have you ever had that happen?
They go in separate spots and.
That's good.
Yeah, no.
So the reason that Tony is a solo hunter most of the time is because he's realized that when you hunt with people and maybe their tree stand is higher than yours, that they actually pee on you. That's also happened. Yeah. So Tyler's trying to crack on me for drinking my own pee jug one time. Well, next season, the dude, dadgum, just didn't pay any attention to the wind direction. Just
I was wearing scent lock, you know, forget the wind, just hunt.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Yeah, but so we are slaps when it comes to traveling, apparently. We can't do anything right, man. That's why we got you on the phone. So.
Yeah, no, I've traveled quite a bit. I played in a couple of bands, you know, and peeing in bottles in a van was no big deal. It's a little bit more difficult to pick up, you know, but I have a few thoughts about travel, and I think I travel pretty well, but at the same time, I've never had to leave for 2 months, you know, so things could probably be a little different. And there's always something you can learn from somebody, man. Like, it doesn't matter if even, you know, this is one thing I think a lot of hunters struggle with is not being the alpha male and, like, understanding that even from, like, dudes that have only done something a few times, you can learn something sometimes from people that are just pretty novice, you know? So, and not that you are, but I mean, to be humble and to know that is a good way to gain more expertise, I think. And so we decided we would have the best guy on for the traveling stuff. And, you know, with that, I guess, like, the first general question is, like, what do you put into place, and how far in advance are you putting into place your system before you actually ever pack a single thing?
System for
traveling to hunt, you know, like what you're doing right now, where you're headed. What does it look like to actually, before you get anything in the truck, are you building a list? Are you thinking about your tags? What do you have to think about those tags, and how does that determine what you bring and that kind of thing?
Gotcha. So, yeah, the tags, you know, determining where you're going to hunt, obviously, is the first thing that's going to be determine what gear you take. So, you know, there's been years where I didn't even have a single rifle tag, firearm tag, even any weapon. So, you know, right there, you scratch off a lot of gear that you just don't need, you know, to bring. Once tag season's all over and I've got it laid out, what, you know, where I'm going to be hunting and what I'm going to be doing, unless it's something new, I'll have a good idea of what kind of gear I'm going to be using. You know, Kansas, I'm going to be decoying, spot and stalk, you know, rattling in bucks down there. Colorado, early archery, deer tag, I'm going to be up in the high country, most likely backpacking in, you know, and it's, you know, and elk hunt's in different part, you know, and elk hunt compared to, like, last year I had in Colorado compared to my elk hunt last year in Montana were completely different. One's high elevation, one's low elevation. So you got different gear for all different stuff. In the first few years, I did do the list thing, but anymore, I've got a bunch of totes that I, you know, keep all my gear in, you know, in the off season. And basically, at the end of a season, I'll make a list of, you know, when you're driving, you know, I drive so much. You know, on the way home, I'll basically make a list of what broke, what needs to be replaced, whatever, and then I'll replace that over the winter. So that stuff stays kind of in its home, and I keep it relatively organized.
Sure.
And there's always new gear that I'm testing for X-Lite, to write reviews on that I'll be plugging in. But then that stuff all kind of, I have a large basement area that kind of like turned into gear area, and I'll lay those totes out usually a couple weeks before I plan on leaving. This year I was a little late in it, and it happened like a few days before. But it gives me a chance to go through everything again and, you know, make sure everything's good, and then I move the gear to the garage, still all spread out, and then it's just a matter of, you know, backing up the truck, and I have a small flatbed trailer that I carry two small freezers and a little four-wheeler, which I started using in 2000 17, I think, was the first year I brought the four-wheeler. Mm-hmm. After I had done about $6,000 worth of damage in Arizona on an elk hunt to my truck.
Yeah, you can definitely buy a four-wheeler for less than that. So.
I listened to, I got some great advice from a good guy, but he's like, oh yeah, we drive up there all the time. Well, I don't know what kind of rock crawler he's using, but an F-250 is definitely not the right vehicle to take up there. I haul that little guy around now. I bought the smallest little four-wheel drive four-wheeler I can find, and that thing saves a lot of wear and tear from my truck.
Sure.
Just getting the trailheads.
Yeah, okay, let's think about it this way a little bit too. And maybe, I don't know how this looks for you. Like some hunts, there may be a hunt that you go on, like say the Ibex hunt or something like that, that you don't go on every year, right? And so there's some different things in that system that you may use possibly. A lot of the guys that are listening to this podcast, I can guarantee you, are either thinking about going on their first elk hunt or they haven't been in 3 years. So their totes are not packed anymore. You know what I mean? So what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's going to either go on a new hunt this year or, who's, you know, going to go on a hunt that they haven't been on in a few years or whatever, as far as like packing gear, what are some tips that they could be thinking about to be prepared for that?
Well, if I listen to the podcast, they're already learning, and that's good.
Yeah.
Podcasts are fantastic for, learning anything you want to learn about, but there's enough of them now that focus on gear. And between that and, I started out I didn't start out in the mountains, but when I my early 20s, I started traveling around the Midwest and go to Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Ohio, and just, I'd sleep in different farmers' barns for a month and a half. And then eventually I just got the elk bug, and I'm going to do it. And I jumped in. But I didn't know anything either. And, there was websites like Archery Talk, that Western hunting section. You could learn. There's some guys there I became friends with. I learned a lot from. Rockslide was fantastic. There was so many guys that were eager to help. And, just a couple of concerns. You could have, three or four different guys who are, been hunting in the mountains for whatever, the time that, here's their whole gear list. It's basically, if the information's out there, you just gotta look for it.
And, yeah.
There's probably never been a better time to be doing this because, this has been a whole lot different, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I mean, for me personally, it sounds like you're kind of saying this, but you kind of just have to do your best the first time you go and just be tough. And there's going to be something you forget or something you didn't know that you needed. And you just got to be uncomfortable sometimes. And then after you've done it a few times, you start to really fine tune that system a little bit,
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we were last year. We went on a backcountry elk hunt in a wilderness area, and it's okay, I'm going to learn as much as I can, like you said, from podcasts and forums and all that. And then you just kind of got to commit and just deal with some junk pretty much, And I think for me, one of the things I learned more than anything is how much I didn't really need to bring, there's,
yes.
I think the stupid thing I always do is always bring way too much food. And I'm trying to do better at it, but it's still hard, man.
Peanut butter, mainly.
Yeah, I want peanut butter so bad, But, that's always kind of the thing. And Tyler does a pretty good job with this. I think he's a little hungry sometimes, but he doesn't admit it. Whenever you kind of step out of the backcountry stuff and then you start talking about more the travel you're doing, it's real hard to not be there's Taco Bell, how do you manage eating on the road and trying to stay healthy? Because, if you travel like you do, or we travel quite a bit too, if every time you hit the road you eat fast food, you're going to end up being a big bloated sack of lazy.
Dude, you're going to be get somewhere. XL real quick.
Yeah.
These sick larges don't fit no more.
How do you manage that road food?
Honestly, I'm not the best at that. I'll be honestly, I I eat crap food when I'm on the road.
Cool.
Good. Me too. We're not the only ones.
I eat healthier food when I'm backpacked in, probably with the freeze-dried food, than I do when I'm actually moving between hunts. The thing that saves me is, there's all kinds of different people who hunt mountains. You got the guy who's a glasser, you got the guy who's still hunter, then you got the guy that just hikes his ass off. I'm kind of a cross between the glassing guy and the hike my ass off guy. And I just, it's nothing to, 10, 15 miles a day. And I, after a few weeks of doing that, and if I'm like driving around once every week or two, I can eat pretty much whatever I want.
And yeah.
I'm still, I left home at 185. I'll come home at 175. And, I'll look at it when I was 30 when I come home. So
that's the reason you started hunting out west. Because when you eat Taco Bells and then you go, whitetail hunt, sometimes you can, and then you put some Duplex cookies on top of that, man. It's like,
I think Kansas every year I gain back half of the weight in 2 weeks. I'll gain back half of what I lost over 3 months in the mountains.
Oh, guarantee, man. You get one of those northerners blows in, like, you going to eat for sure.
Chicken spaghetti.
Yeah, hot meals every meal. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, man. You're going to do some truck camping, I'm sure. What is your truck camping system look like as far as like the food that goes? How are you heating up meals? Are you still doing the mountain house thing or whatever at when you're still at the truck? Or are you trying to eat out of the ice chest or that kind of thing?
I try to eat out of the ice chest as much as I can. I keep Yetis loaded up with food. In the mornings, whatever, I'll have one of the little off-grid food company oatmeals or whatever.
Oh, those things are good, man.
But I almost don't consider those. They're almost like in a different category of freeze-dried food because he uses everything that's healthy and organic. So it's there's no guilt in eating one of those.
Yeah.
But I definitely try to stock up on stuff that I keep in the freezer. It'll last a week. And I can just punch on it whatever throughout the week. But it's the sleeping situation with it's funny. If I'm like so okay, my first hunt this year is Nevada, Archer Deer. It's a unit I've never stepped foot in. I won't set up a base camp tent until I find a buck that I want to kill. And maybe not even then, because I'm going to keep looking for others for a plan B, plan C, whatever. So I'll literally sleep in the cab of my truck. One thing I love about this Ford trucks that this captain shares are so comfortable. And if you point on a little bit of a hill pointing up, I can get the seat almost flat. I can sleep like a baby in it.
That's a pro tip. That's a pro tip for sure.
Nothing behind the front seat, so I can lean back.
Yeah. Is that why you had your rear wheel removed earlier today? It's because you're going through the flatlands, so you can't park on a hill, so you just you take the rear tires off. Is that what that was going on with the Instagram post?
That was I started getting a vibration in the steering wheel. Every one of my tires was out of balance. I don't even know how I was making it down the highway. Once I find something that and I've got a game plan of where I'm going to hunt and how I'm going to hunt, I'll set up. It's not a wall tent, but it's a 8-man Big Angus tent, a big one, and pull out a nice cot, and I make a little hole in there that it takes me an hour or two to set up and tear down if I had to change plans, but. Places where I'm getting hunting out of, I try to make it as comfortable as possible. And, the important thing being a cot that I get a really good night's sleep in and a little portable shower. Because there's nothing that rejuvenates me better than, cleaning up with some cold water at the end of the day. So,
Makes
a big difference.
What do you use for that show? You have a solar shower, or what do you have for that?
It's made by Nemo. It's just a little foot pump. I think it probably holds, I'm guessing it holds probably 2-3 gallons of water. And so it gathers heat from the sun. Use this little foot pump. You step on it. It's got a little 5-foot, 6-foot board or hose and a little just a squeeze nozzle at the end. pretty good.
Cool.
If you don't have sunshine, it's not warm out, it can be extremely refreshing.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. No way of warming it up, but it's a lifesaver when, you know, on these, like where I'm going now. I was just talking to a buddy down there today, and he said he's a little further south than the unit I'm going to be in, but, you know, it's mid 90s at 9,000 feet elevation.
Golly.
Yeah, it's gonna be hot.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're making a big long haul right now, and you talked about stopping at a truck stop or a rest stop or something like that to sleep at night.
Yep.
This is probably, if there's a point of contention between Tyler and I when it comes to working as a team, it is how far you can drive before it's a day and you need to stop. I am the let's drive all night and make it happen. And Tyler,
but now that he's a dad, he starts falling asleep unless I'm talking. No.
But there's probably definitely some good reasons from Tyler's point for sure. Of like, you know, 12 hours, 14 hours on the road is kind of a full day's driving for him. And, you know, for me, it's just like, gosh, if I could just get there in one day of driving, then I have extra time. But really, I just need to make the more time on the front end or the back end. How do you approach that?
Well, when I first started, I was so, I remember the first couple times I drove out west for an elk hunt, I was so jacked up that I probably only slept 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I got to get there. Anymore, I just, you know, I'm not the, I have a lot of admiration for truck drivers. Like, I don't know how they do what they do. As soon as I start feeling sleepy, I'm looking for a spot to pull over. I just don't risk it. And so I'll sleep for 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours, but whatever my body just tells me when I wake up and I go. So it's just, you know, let my body kind of tell me what I need. But
yeah.
Definitely I don't take any chances with it.
Yeah. So you're driving from the upper Midwest right now all the way to Nevada. How many days is it going to take you to get there?
Well, I should be tomorrow in Colorado. That's going to be my first stop. I'm going to stop in Colorado and drop off gear that I don't need. You know, my freezers, because my next hunt is in Colorado, and I got a buddy there that, you know, I'll have 2 hunts in Colorado, deer and elk. So I'm going to drop a bunch of stuff off at his place, freezers, I've got a tote full of gun hunting stuff. I don't need that. I don't want to leave a $6,000, $7,000 custom rifle in my truck while I'm in Nevada, so I'll leave that with him and just basically dump off a bunch of gear. And then we'll head to Nevada, and I think I should be there. I'll be in Colorado tomorrow afternoon, and I'm thinking I'll probably make it to Nevada the next day. So.
Cool. Gotcha. So talk about the freezer thing. You mentioned it last time we had you on the podcast, but are those freezers, when you put meat in them, do you try to freeze the meat and then drive home with the freezer and all the meat in there frozen? Or how does that look?
So, first off, you got to have a friend that has a garage or a yard. I mean, I've literally just put them in people's yard and put a tarp over them for 3 weeks. But having a friend that, you know, lets you do that is very key. And I'm lucky enough, I've got some good contacts that I've met, most of them on the mountain or in a town, whatever, where I'm, you know, closest to where I'm hunting. Mm-hmm. And, I put them in, you know, after killing them, I always have ice in the Yetis, get them on ice, get them to the freezer, and then get them froze. In a perfect situation, you know, you got at least a night you're going to spend there, so you can get them a good start before you put them in the, you know, back on the trailer, and then take it to the next location where you can, again, take it off the trailer at your buddy's, your next buddy's house in the next state. And that meat, once, it's in Colorado, I've got 2 tags, deer and elk, so which I'll probably kill a deer first. I'm going to concentrate on that anyways. And then that deer, within, you know, 2 days, you know, even a 60-pound, whatever, 80 pounds of boned-out meat will just be a giant block of frozen, you know, meat. Mm-hmm. In just a couple of days, and that will stay. That, I mean, they never defrost. I've literally had a couple years ago, I had a deer and an elk from Colorado, and I went to Wyoming, hunted there, shot a deer and an elk, put that deer and elk in there, and got a couple days freeze on it. Drove to Montana, hunted elk for 10 days, shot a bull, put him in the Eddie, and then drove home. And by the time I got home, the deer and elk from Colorado and Wyoming still hadn't even started to defrost. And I literally did not, I didn't have anywhere in Montana at that time to plug it in. So I literally just kept it parked in the shade with the tarp over, and it did fine.
Yeah,
so.
Golly.
And then you got an arrow sponsor after that? Out of arrows.
No, I don't arrow sponsor. I actually have two different bows set with different arrows.
That's cool.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So are you, I'm guessing you're just using like big straps to strap the freezers up on the trailer, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
just making sure yep. they stay closed. Do you duct tape the doors or anything, or is it a chest freezer?
Yeah, they're just like the little mini chest freezers. Okay. Right? 4 foot long, 3 foot high.
Yeah.
I've never duct taped them. I just keep them strapped down.
Do you ever take like food in those to kind of get you through the trip?
There is gear in every cooler in the freezers. like right now, I've got a Target in one freezer. I usually have the skull cleaning kit. You know, because every state, you know, you have to clean all the brain matter out now before you transport it from one state to another. So yeah. That's usually in one freezer and. They've got gear in them until they get used the first time. And then, you know, it may get shifted around a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you ever stopped and like got an RV spot just so you could plug in your freezers? You know, like an RV park.
No, I have not. Like I said, they if you keep them out of the sun, you know, and usually by the time I'm going home, it's late October. Yeah. So it's cooler then, and I don't, you know, they just been plugged in at different places along the way. And even when I get home, you know, if it takes me a couple days to drive home, and even if I have a, you know, like that Montana trip a couple years ago where I didn't have anywhere to plug it in, and I hunted for 10 days and 2 days driving home, you know, those freezers still sat in my garage open, you know, me waiting for them to thaw out so I can start processing the meat. So it's.
Wow.
You get those giant blocks of meat frozen. They'll stay that way for quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, Tony is a big buck killer, no doubt. If you go look at his Instagram, you know that for a fact. And we actually just released a Map Scout Challenge video, which you've heard us talk about. And this is from Missouri. We got the camera in the day before we released the video. And speaking of big bucks, Tony might even be jealous of one of these bucks, right?
Oh, man, there's a toad on there. What's cool is that he was in a real specific spot. You know, there's like a really neat tactic that involves beavers that led us to be able to get this buck on trail camera there. So some like really specific scouting involved. And if you want to go check it out and see what that's all about and understand like how beavers and whitetail interact, go over to our YouTube channel, The Element, on YouTube and watch the Map Scout Challenge from Missouri, Mark Twain National Forest.
So what's your skull cleaning kit look like?
Just you know, like an old turkey fryer, and then I've went through a lot of different pods. Mm-hmm. The I had to make a new one last year because my bull's Colorado bull's skull was too big. It was too long. I couldn't get the back of his head in the water. So this year I made a cut down a 55 gallon drum to basically the first ridge, so it's probably 14 inches tall, and I brought that with me so I'll be able to clean anything I kill, and then that's it. You know, I pretty much, I know you're not supposed to do it, but there are power washers in every town that are real useful for cleaning out that stuff.
Yeah,
and sometimes I got a buddy that'll let me use that. Like in Wyoming and Kansas, I do, but other spots is just yeah.
So you just
wash them and get them as clean as I can. I don't bleach them and stuff until I get home. They turn out just fine.
So do you?
I'm just getting all the matter off of it.
Yeah. I haven't done a Euro. I've never been interested in doing one really. But I've got some guys, I've got a friend here that does a great job and doesn't charge me very much. And so I've just had him do it. Do you Like, do you just boil it down and then power wash it, or is it the other way around? I know I sound like a real novice saying this, but
you slow cook it, basically just a little light simmer, and then you just gotta watch out. You don't want to do it too much. Gotten distracted before, and then it dries way out too much. So as soon as the stuff starts kind of peeling off, usually what I'll do is take a wire, like a piece of coat hanger, and if you have a drill, it works great. You can stick that inside the brainstem hole and spin it with a drill, and just liquefies everything. Power washer as much as you can off, put it back in there, and usually I do that probably two or three times. So I'll take it out, power wash it, put it back in the water, just let it simmer it again, and by the time that last power wash, lots of little stuff's coming off. I mean, everything's coming off.
Yeah. When do you add the onions, carrots, and potatoes?
I always joke about that, but it's pretty nasty.
It's a gross deal, man. The power washing thing's my least favorite part. I haven't done it a whole lot, but
Your mouth and stuff.
You want to wear some stuff.
Okay.
You want to wear some goggles and some stuff, especially with like the CWD implications. Like, there hasn't been a species to species jump yet, but I don't want to be
the first one.
I don't want to be specimen number one. That'd be bad.
I definitely don't want to be wearing your nice clothes when you're doing it.
That's pretty nasty. Do you ever get your animals tested for CWD when you travel?
I have not. There was a check station in Wyoming 2 years ago, and they took the lymph nodes off my buck and my bull. And I don't know if that's what they're testing for or not, but I never got any phone call or anything, so I'm guessing it was fine.
Yeah. But, so you just kind of out of sight, out of mind, I'm going to eat it kind of thing?
I'm pretty picky about what I shoot, and not to say that if I saw something that was sick and wounded, I'd probably burn my tag on it just to put it out of its misery, but most of the bucks I'm shooting are extremely healthy. At least by looks. I'm sure they could still be a carrier, but no signs of poor health.
So when you're traveling state to state like you are, this isn't like the most common scenario, but it's a thing that you could run into, especially you, where you're taking, like a elk you shot in Wyoming and take it to Colorado and vice versa or whatever it might be. Do you run into any issues with like having, a fairly fresh kill from a different state in a state when you're trying to hunt? As far as legality goes, like, is there any sketchy stuff that you need to watch out for or make sure you do?
I don't think so. Well, you can't bring any bone. Some states probably still allow you to, but enough of them don't that I just take all bones off. The only bone that gets moved from state to state is the skull, and that's free of any brain matter. So, I think there's legality there. It keeps you safe anyways. If there was ever any question like where it came from, being a writer, I'm also pretty picky about what I shoot, so it's gonna be big if I'm killing it and old. So I'm gonna have a picture trail literally for articles that I write. Silly as it sounds, you basically do a photo shoot after you're shooting these animals. So it's pretty clear. It'd be pretty easy to prove where it came from. So.
What about the regulations on like tag placements and stuff like that? It gets kind of weird, state to state. Some states have carcass tags, some states have antler tags. Like, how do you keep up with that stuff?
The same way, when you're in the winter, when you're doing, tag up, every state has different rules for applying and applications, and you just kind of, it's kind of all inclusive. You just kind of learn along the way that, which states want you to have proof of sex, which ones want you to keep the tag on the antlers or keep the tag with the biggest portion of meat, or some of them don't even, you just can have it in your pocket or in the cab of the truck.
That's
handy. I usually do is no matter what, I just keep proof of sex. I'll just keep a testicle on it, on the biggest, ham on the, muscle out of the hind quarter, one of the hind quarters. And then take the tag, and it just stays with the meat until I get home.
So.
Do you, the thing for me is like, the testicle thing is cool to leave on a bull, but then if it's a cow, what are you supposed to do?
Same thing, just proof of sex, but so you just have her reproductive organs.
Okay. Man, that's just, that's so weird to me, you know, think about.
It's hard to keep them on sometimes, you know, especially when, like, you got to keep that in mind, like, you go from shooting the animal to the first thing you need to consider is leaving proof of sex. Because that's the first place you start cutting most of the time, unless you're doing gutless method or something. When then that's a whole nother rabbit trail, you know, trying to gutless method and leave proof of sex on an animal. That's kind of a weird thing, too. So it's a...
You just basically cut around it and leave that patch of skin attached right to the other side of her... that muscle, or and you know, you'd be fine. I haven't gotten out an animal. I got one last year, but prior to that, and that was just a doe. And we were able to drive right to her. I've done the boneless or gutless method, both. I guess not every animal, even my Kansas bucks. Dating back prior to 2012, it's just cleaner and easier to me now. And like down in Kansas, it takes out the question of, can I drive across this field? Does a farmer, this rancher, not or whatever? And just easier.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, one of the things I've found on elk is that, like, the gutless method is awesome if you can make it happen. But the last elk I killed was laying there in such a way that he just weighed so much, me and my dad couldn't get him turned over to do it without spilling the guts. So, like, we had to spill the guts. Yeah. And then, he actually was light enough to be able to flip, and we kind of did, like, I guess a blended method there, But that's, like, the one thing where I really like the way gutless method works. And, if they're laying there the right way, it works good. But if they're laying there kind of feet up in a bunch of, juniper or whatever, or spruce or whatever it is, it kind of gets a little bit tough.
I killed one in 2014 that died on the run, then lodged himself in a log jam, like a V-shaped down timber.
Oh, man.
And I couldn't move him forward, backwards, or left or right, and I had to basically just start at the top and take everything down as far as I could. And I couldn't even gut him. I just had to take everything from the top down. And then when I got to a point there where his loins are off, his head's off, the tops of hinds and fronts are off, and then he weighed less enough. Like, it was messy, and it took like three times as long.
Yeah.
And the muscle groups, I wasn't able to keep them together like I like to. But I know what you mean. Sometimes they don't help us out with where they're
expired. Yeah. No, they're not thinking about us too much when that's happening.
No consideration at all.
Yeah. Selfish, man. So, speaking of the legalities, have you ever run into a situation where you kill a big animal and game warden checks you and wants to know where you shot it at? And does that get weird sometimes?
I usually am in contact with them before a hunt, asking them questions anyways. So, if you offer, information to them, you'd be surprised what you get back in return. And, last year in Colorado, I was scouting. The season wasn't open yet for deer, and I saw a helicopter doing some peculiar activity. There was a giant basin just full of elk, like probably 400 or 500 head of elk. And I was scouting for deer, but there was a couple deer in there I was watching. And a helicopter came over one of the peaks and got the elk riled up, and they took off like in a stampede. And the helicopter got pretty low and followed him. And I had the spotting scope set up and with the digital scope. I was filming when he did it, so I got the whole thing on film. And I had already been in contact with him, just asking questions. Well, I called him again, and I said, "Hey, there's somebody up here harassing help with a helicopter." And you can imagine how riled up he was. And so he's like, "Can you bring that? Can you give me that footage?" And so I went to town. Or the next time I went to town to get food and supplies, I ran him down and showed it to him. And In the long run, he ended up finding out it was the sheep biologist. It was one of his coworkers, which I don't think it means. I think what they were doing was still wrong. But by going in there and talking to him, he kind of opened up to me, and he's like, "So what have you found so far?" And I said, "I found one that's pretty good." And and he looked at me like, you know, obviously he knew what basin that I was watching when this helicopter came across. And he's like, "Yeah, you're about a mile and a half from him, aren't you?" Or this big when the helicopter happened. I'm like, "Yeah." And he knew exactly where that buck was.
That's funny.
And this was in a wilderness. Yeah, this was in a wilderness unit 7 miles in. And so that was telling you what kind of, you know, he's doing his job. He's all over the place in there.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
I mean, he wasn't offering up exactly where he was. And I showed him pictures and he's like, "Yep, that's..."
That's cool.
He's the best one I know in there. So,
but I mean, like, I'm thinking more. So, I guess the reason I pose that question is because I'm thinking more, probably because, you know, you move around out west a lot, and you don't, you know, like, if you draw a really good tag, a lot of times it's going to take you 10 or 20 years to do that again, maybe. But, like, in the deer hunting world, I feel like sometimes it can get weird because, you know, there's just a lot of, I know, I mean, I go to church with a game warden that hunts deer, loves hunting deer. Most of them love to hunt, you know. And so you think about, like, whitetail, that stuff is, like, super competitive when it comes to getting permission on land or leases or even on public land especially. And so I just think about it. I'm like, man, you know, if Casey or I was to kill a big deer on a public piece, man, like, are we going to have to show that game warden where we killed it to prove that we killed it on X WMA or X, you know, walk-in or whatever it might be? And then is he going to go in there and hunt it next year, you know? So it's kind of a weird deal. I mean, I just was wondering if you had experienced something like that before where a guy's sitting on your spot next year or whatever.
No, I never have. I think that I think when I first started hunting the mountains, I was a little naive to how good people are at picking up where you're hunting just by pictures. And I shared, you know, some scenery pictures that I had people, you know, and some of them have become friends, but literally, you know, they message you and they're like, "So what'd you see?" And blah blah blah, you know, fill in the blank. Basically, yeah. And they're like, "We can tell, we know exactly where you're at, you know, just from a couple of ridge lines." And, you know, I deleted all the pictures that, you know, this was a long time ago. But nowadays, you know, I scout a lot of areas I don't necessarily hunt, and I take a lot of pictures in there just for future reference. And if you're looking at any of my articles and you see scenery pictures, you can be 100% positive that they're not from the unit that I killed the animal in. I will throw, you know, Nevada or a scenery mountain pictures in with a Colorado story or whatever, just to mess up people, because everybody's trying to figure out, you know, where you're getting a big deer from, which doesn't make any sense to me because he's already dead. And there's a chance another one could be in there, but not always the case.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. So what else, man, when you're traveling, like for me personally, if I'm going to go to the mountains or if it's deer season and I'm going to travel, like I want to make sure I have chapstick. And a lot of times I carry like working hands, you know, or something that, because I kind of have dry skin and my knuckles will crack and stuff, you know, if I'm out in it for a few days. And so do you have anything like that that's like, you know, comfort of sorts, whether it's food, drink, you know, or toiletries or stuff like that?
You know, chapstick is one of the things that, a chapstick and a lighter, I have one in my pocket and one in my, like, a little essentials kit in my backpack. And just because, yeah, if you forget that on a backpack trip, you are either one, fire or the chapstick, I'd be screwed. The creature comfort thing to me that I have to have now is probably that little shower I was talking about. I mean, there's nothing worse than being, you know, 100 miles from, you know, or whatever, 50 miles from the closest town, and it has a shower, and, you know, you've been in there for 10 days, and you just, you know, you can only do so much with baby wipes after a while. It's just, it wears on you. And if I can clean up every night, I find my mental attitude is, I can get after it a lot harder.
Yeah.
What's the best type of wipey?
I like the dude wipes. Those are good.
Dude wipes.
I went and filmed a guy on a sheep hunt one time that gave me some of those. So,
those are good.
Yeah. Do you ever stay in a hotel?
occasionally. Last year I did one night. One night last year, it was after I shot my bull in Colorado, and I had to hire a packer for that one. I was in about 11 miles from my ATV at the trailhead, and there was no way. It would have taken me 3 days to get him out.
Yeah.
So I called, got a packer. By the time we got back to my truck, it was, you know, late at night, and I killed him in a burn, and I was covered from head to toe in just soot and black, you know, just it was like a coal miner. And there was no showers anywhere. The only place I was doing was basically get a room, and I was ready for it. And but I try not to. I mean, I don't mind camping, and if it's super cold, like the year before last, I drew a late archery deer in New Mexico, and I got down there with the plans of hunting out of a base camp, but it was negative 20s for the majority of the trip, and I wasn't prepared for that, so I ended up, luckily hotels are pretty inexpensive in New Mexico.
Did you say negative 20s?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
-22 the first morning, and that was pretty much the average every morning.
Oh.
So the very end of the hunt.
Are you speaking in wind chills, or that's like actual temperature?
No, that was what my truck was telling me.
Golly, that's very cold, sir. That's very cold. Ooh, yeah. Man. Golly, I think that's when KC shuts down too. So, you know, I guess that's part of being from where you're from. You kind of can acclimate a little bit more to super cold temperatures, but us Texas boys, that ain't happening, man.
We were hoping for it. I mean, I was praying for it too, because I mean, that's, you know, it's January migration hunts.
Yeah.
If you don't get the weather, you don't see nearly as many deer, and it got snow and cold right before I got there, and it was perfect.
Yeah,
man, that's nuts. So, if you say you're, doing your trip like you're doing right now, man, what, when it comes down to packing the stuff in the truck, what does that look like? Do you have a system that's specific, or you just go, I'm just going to start playing Tetris here?
Very specific. Everything's in the same spot every year. Clothes are in the back seat, and I forget what they're called, the little Yeti lockout boxes or whatever they are.
Uh-huh.
They're perfect for, I got my, all my pants in one of them, bunch, tops in another one, hats and gloves in another one. And that stuff stays in the truck, in the cab. And then in the back, I've got gear in one little tote. I've got food in one little tote, and everything's got its own little spot. And, things that I use more often are at the back of the truck. They can slide out easier. I kind of ran out of time this year, but I wanted to get one of those decked systems that have the pull-out trays. I just didn't have enough time to order and install it. But it saves a lot of time not looking for stuff, and things go wrong, you end up having to grab other gear. I've got backups of almost everything, and oftentimes you have to use them. But everything has to have it be its own little place.
What do you decide doesn't need a backup? How do you decide something doesn't need a backup?
Well, that's a great question. I actually am taking less gear this year. I had everything out in the garage. She's like, where's everything else? I'm like, I know, it looks like less, isn't it? And she's like, you're forgetting a lot of stuff. I'm like, oh, don't say that. But there was just a lot of things that I decided not to take. And it's just, it's just little piddly stuff, but it added up to a tote or two. And, but anything important. I got a, backup bow. I've got two bows set up identical. I've got, backup binoculars. I'm usually doing a binocular review every year for some type of optic for rock slide anyway. So I've got more of them than I need. And, some things like releases and flashlights. So I've got more than two. I've got piles of them. I think I got three or four releases with me. Three of them are identical. And then my target panic gets too bad. I got a tension activator release I can escape to real quick. It's just, some things you just, if it's not a big space requirement, just bank on the side of caution and bring it.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I got you.
So, there's a lot of guys out there who are probably thinking that this all sounds real cool, but they might not really know where to start. How did you determine? I know you got a system for everything. I can tell now, you know, like you're a technical guy. In fact, we're going to name this Technical Tony Treach, I think, is going to be the name of the podcast. But, which is definitely a compliment, man. You got it dialed for sure. But, like, how did you start deciding where you were going to go and, like, start putting these trips together? Was it all about trophy potential, or was there parts of the country you wanted to see? Or, like, how did that come together?
Well, it started out, you know, like I said before, I used to do the Midwest, the same thing, and it was just opportunity then. You know, I was hunting really good counties in Illinois and Ohio and Iowa, and I'm definitely focusing on, you know, my goal is to shoot a, you know, something that's going to grow some good bracket with my bow or gun, doesn't matter. So I'm looking for older age class animals, and you know, the first couple trips to the mountains, I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to go and experience it, and I had really no expectations. I was going to shoot the first legal bull I saw, and my first elk was just a little 4x4 in Colorado. And but once it's under my belt, like, all right, I'm going to take this serious. And there's a lot of research that goes into finding where, you know, and go hunt in places like that. Hunting full have made it a lot easier nowadays to you know, they shortened the research curve quite a bit. But, you know, I want to hunt every year. First off, I'm not gonna say I don't apply for the really glory tags that take lots of points, but only in a couple states and only in a couple species. Most of my hunts that I'm applying for are a mix of opportunity. I want to hunt at least, you know, in Colorado, I want to hunt every year for elk and deer, no matter what. Kansas, if I ever don't draw Kansas, I'm going to be a really sad guy.
Yeah.
But there's other spots that, you know, if I hunt Utah every 2 or 3 years, cool. If I hunt Nevada every 5-7 years, fine. But I'm not going to go somewhere that doesn't have an animal that I want to kill. If they're not there, we can't kill them. And, you know, so I've struck out before. 2 years ago, I drew Nevada and scouted it for 10 days and turned the tag back in. And I didn't find, you know, in 10 days of scouting with zero other pressure, I never saw a very human. I didn't see a single mature buck. And it's like, well, this is, if I can't find them in 10 days before the season starts, once the elk hunters and the sheep hunters and the deer hunters start pushing everything around, it ain't going to get easier. So, you know, I turned it in. So it's trial and error a little bit, but there's all kinds of information out there on the internet nowadays. And you know, people that are, some are willing to help. The easier the tag is to draw, the less willing people will be to give you advice and information.
Yeah.
People, you know, that draw, you know, the tags that take 20 points to draw, people will, you can get a list of people to talk to, and they'll tell you everything about it and where they killed it. But if it's something that they're going to hunt every year or two, or even five, you're going to have to do some serious digging to figure out, you know, where there's a good mix of quality and opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. So after you know, you've been doing this marathon traveling hunting thing for a while, whenever you point the truck home, are you more fulfilled or more exhausted?
It depends. Most of the time, I would say fulfilled and exhausted. sometimes I'm pretty disappointed too. Last year's Montana hunt for elk, I put a lot of time into it and was on the biggest bulls I've ever. I mean, I saw three bulls were probably the three biggest I've ever seen, and they were all in the same unit the same year. And I had opportunities to, you know, that just little things went wrong, and it, I didn't get an arrow off.
Yeah.
And I hunted right till the last day of the season. It was driving over now was a little tough.
Yeah,
because I left cards on the table. So,
yeah.
But usually I'm exhausted.
I can
happy.
I can commiserate with you there. I mean, we hunted 9.5 days in the Gila Wilderness last year for elk, and day one, I had my shot at, you know, the, like, 350 plus bull and didn't connect. And after that, you know, for the next like 8.5 days, it was a struggle in many different senses, you know, but yeah, had to drive home with eating a tag from a pretty awesome hunt, you know, and it's a very strange feeling for sure.
Yeah, it'll make you rethink what you know, your decisions you made, but you know, you just gotta live with it. You gotta, when it's happening, you just gotta be like, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be happy with it one way or the other, whether it works or not.
I tell you what, man, going through something like that, not that it's like, not like I went to war or something, you know, but like in the hunter space, like it's a difficult thing to deal with, and it. I've never like longed for the next season more, you know, like it's like at this point in time, like I've got an axe to grind, you know, it's like, I got to get back out there and prove my worth to myself, you know?
Yeah. No, I understand that for sure. I've got a different Montana deer tag or elk tag is here, but there'll definitely be some redemption in my mind when I hunt that one.
Yeah, nice. For sure. Well, Tony, man, I love talking to you, man. I appreciate you doing this. You're a pro, man. You do what a lot of guys wish they could do, and you have some killer experiences, man, and just overall experience, man. I can't think of a better guy to talk to about stuff like this. I really appreciate you taking the time while you're driving across the great state of Iowa, probably in a perfect time to see big velvet deer, and you're sitting here talking to us about packing a truck. So I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm still looking for deer. It's okay.
There you go.
I think we heard you dinging for the binoculars just then, actually. So.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, the sun's getting close to the horizon. They'll be moving soon.
That's right,
yeah,
man.
I guarantee you, man. Well, where can we check out more stuff from Tony Treach right now, man?
There's usually a couple reviews per year on Rockslide. Sometimes more, but... I got stuff on there. I was actually on the cover of Eastman's last month. So if you're a subscriber to that, you know, you got that to read. And I got an elk story coming out there this year too.
Jeez. But that's like the Sports Illustrated, you know, cover of Sports Illustrated. That's for the hunters, you know. Goodness, that's awesome.
Yeah, my wife, she likes telling her girlfriend she married a cover model now.
That's funny.
Oh, man. Well, unfortunately, that cover model is going to be gone for the next 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the hardest parts is being away from her.
Yeah.
So it's work. And, you know, it's not all fun and game. You know, I'm hunting state to state and trailing in between and without going home. It's fun, but it's also a lot of work. And there's really no downtime. Like I'm scrambling from state to state and, you know, trying to be as efficient as I can. And I mean, I have a hard time explaining it to her sometimes. She just thinks I'm, sitting at a beach chair out here and just wait here to like run up to the side of the truck and die. But
yeah,
it's, I know. Work.
I would take it once this season for sure. Not the whole time, but once.
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to make them understand sometimes that, like how busy you are when you're like, you know, even during midday, if you like, you know, I think about this, like if you're hunting deer or whatever, you hunt the morning, things kind of slow down. You may go back to the truck and get lunch and kind of regroup and think, okay, well, we didn't see what we needed to this morning. Let's go somewhere else. And like, it is a constant like mental battle of like for all morning you were freezing. So you had to like beat the elements. And then, you know, you go through the middle of the day thinking, how can I get on a deer? Where do I go? And what's the wind going to do? And all these different things. And you go back out in the evening, you do it again till after dark, and you try to find something to eat and go to sleep so you can do it all again before dark, you know, before light the next morning. So it's hard to make your significant other understand how much work it is sometimes, especially when you're like, when I was growing up, I did this for like fun, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Which it's still fun, but you know, I totally hear what you're saying with that, man. But anyway, good luck, dude. Safe travels.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you check-ins on Instagram and that kind of thing, man, and seeing how your season goes. So good luck this season.
I appreciate it. Good luck to you guys too.
Well, Tony's going to be hunting a lot of public land, and if you're hunting public land this year, one of the best things you can do if you're learning to hunt is become a YouTube subscriber for The Element and watch some of our new videos. They're going to start releasing September 3rd, public land hotspot videos where we do, you know, just a quick dive into 5 or 6 minutes worth of talking about a particular tactic that we have seen work for us and that we use when we e-scout and that kind of thing. They're called Public Land Hotspots videos. They're going to start releasing the 3rd. I'm going to release 2 that day, and then we're going to go 1 per week every Thursday. So podcast days, you know, are going to be lining up with that. And you're going to get a chance to hopefully learn about those hotspots all the way up till the 1st of October. So definitely some cool stuff there. Hopefully that's a good addition to the Map Scout Challenge stuff.
That's right. And these are all things that really aren't the stuff that you hear about in the public eye. Like, we're not talking buck bedding, and we're not talking about scrapes. Like, we're talking about like some really unique stuff that we've seen that the average guy can really key in on to have success.
Exactly, man. I've always tried to have some creativity and be a little bit original and think a little bit outside the box. I've always tried to do that for a long time, and with music and stuff especially, because if you're just doing what everybody else is doing, you're following the crowd and nobody's going to think you're worth anything. But when it comes to the hunting thing, you know, it's kind of beneficial to us to think outside of the box, right? Because we're kind of going up against, you know, other guys in the public land. And I hate to make it sound like we're going against them, but, you know, if I'm going to go out and use my gas and time away from my family, I prefer that I kill the buck and not do it over there, you know? So,
yeah, I hope he has a good experience, but I want to go home with the animal.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, maybe we can both kill one, but if you're hunting in Texas on public, maybe. There's only one per track, you know?
Yeah, there's only one deer out there, so.
But anyway, yeah, those are cool videos. Go check them out. We had a lot of fun putting those together. We're going to do some more at some point. That's just all we could get out before kind of hunting season started or whatever. But the season playlist is about to kick off, so make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Also, Instagram, you know, we're going to kind of try to keep things pretty live there as far as what we're doing day to day when we're out and that kind of thing. So if you're not following on Instagram, you know, keep up with that. So
there'll be a slight lapse in content from about the 15th of September to the 18th. After we've both tagged out, we'll come back and have some good stuff for you there. But there'll be a little bit of lapse in there because Instagram is cool and they don't let you schedule things out or anything. So, you know, it has to be live when you do it.
Yep.
So that's all right. Everybody's going to love us either way. And, dude, how big of a bull are you going to kill whenever we're gone?
4 by 5, maybe.
Ooh, baby, that's like 9 total.
I know, 9 points, dude. 9
that's
points.
Dumb, dude. A 9 point in the whitetail world is a nice one.
I know.
That's definitely going to be a nice one. Nobody ever talks about that, but like the standard for elk is a 6 by 6. Like, that's what you're trying to kill. That's a 12 point.
Yeah.
And like, if you kill a 12 point in the whitetail world, that's a rare animal when you're talking about mainframe 12, you know, like, I ain't talking about them little briar points on the bases, you know, talking about like, you know, G5s and, not a lot of deer have those. So elk are cool critters, man.
Yeah, they are, man. They're cool. I'm hoping that we can get one down, man. I'm looking forward to spending a little time in the mountains too, just to off and to see the stars and that kind of thing, you know?
So. Yeah, dude, there's a chance you kill 2 12 points in September. Can you believe that? But when y'all go to Nebraska, you got to come in, you got to hold it up on the front end. You know what I'm saying?
I know. If I don't kill a 12 point in Nebraska, then I can't do that this year. So
that's all right. You just go ahead and shoot an 8 point in Nebraska, and you'll let the pressure off right then, and we'll all be happy.
I would be happy with an 8 point.
So, oh man,
I only saw a couple of them last year in Nebraska, so it was
But
I mean, even driving.
you're gonna have a different year this year, man. It's gonna be rocking and rolling. It's gonna be awesome.
I'm stoked, man. We're gonna get a couple of guys on, I think, hopefully soon, that will keep the stoke high. So we've got a few guests lined up that are pretty exciting. We're also going to be coming at you with reports from the hunts that we're going on. And I don't know, man. I can't say anything else except for I'm just ready to be there, man. I'm ready for it to be cooler than it is here in Texas and less hurricane-y and everything else.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Yeah, well, guys, if y'all are listening and you actually are hoping to or probably going to hunt an opener this upcoming week, good luck. I don't get to do that. Tyler does. And y'all are going to have such a great season starting in September, which is freaking awesome. So hope you gain a little knowledge from Tony and all of his expertise on how to pack and how to travel and do all that stuff. That way you don't have all those extra stresses weighing on you.
Yep, that's right, man. I hope it was beneficial. So with that, remember, this is your element.
Living it. Libby-dee.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.